Well, there's a little frustration either side of the river as the budget process always takes longer than you wish it would, and we're waiting for our appropriations this year. We're waiting for, you know, either an authorization or an appropriation bill, neither of which have passed. And
okay, we had a little shot there. So what happens now? What is the process like inside DOD when all of the budget and really all the armed services budgets and the component budgets are in flux? What kind of role-playing or modeling are you doing?
Well, we're doing our review on the $450 billion that was mentioned just a second ago, and that is over the next 10 years. And we're spending almost all of our time on that. We can't wait to see what happens for FY12. I told the Secretary yesterday, it looks like, and he agrees with us, under any scenario, it doesn't look like we'll probably get those decisions from Congress on 12 in time to really inform our decision-making for the 13 budget that's due in February. So we're just proceeding ahead, and the $450 billion is a big enough challenge as it is.
Now, of course, if the special committee, the super committee, so-called, cannot reach a decision, then the idea is sequestration happens. That affects the 2013 budgets, but the next Congress could undo that. So I imagine that probably complicates the whole process, too.
Yes, it does. And the Secretary, I think, has been very clear about his opposition to any further cuts, and in particular to sequestration and all the problems that would ensue. And it would be a huge management challenge for us. It would be very bad, I think, for the morale of our millions of employees to have this threat hanging over them, because it would possibly be hanging over them for a year, as I think you know, that the sequestration would be triggered as early as this January but not take effect until the next January. And if my past experience, certainly last year when we had a couple shutdown drills, as any guide, we will spend an enormous amount of time that could be better spent on managing the department, you know, more efficiently, doing what-if drills, preparing for a sequester that may or may not happen as we get closer to it and people may decide that it's unacceptable. But we won't know that, of course, until the last minute if at least that's the concern.
Now, as comptroller, what are your specific duties in this whole process?
Well,
our
office works for the Secretary and supports him in making the choices, teeing up the choices to hit the target, especially for 13 is our particular responsibility. We have another office that we work closely with that looks at the next 5 years a little more, and we look at the 13 only a little more. So far, we've also been working closely with all the leadership of the department, really, to try and make smart choices about what things we want to protect and where we're willing to take a little risk. But we are now in the process of, we're having meetings with the Deputy Secretary every day this week. I think we had three with the Secretary this week to try and start putting the big choices in front of them, because we're now getting to the point where we have to lock in some of those big choices as we prepare to try and finalize a budget internal to the department, hopefully by no later than mid-December to get it to OMB in time for them to put the whole budget together in January.
A lot of moving parts. We're speaking with Mike McCord, Principal Deputy Undersecretary of Defense and the Comptroller, and you mentioned some tough choices. Are there any choices that you have to make that you can clue us in on now?
Well, I think a good example of a big area, and I won't maybe name a specific decision, but would be compensation. The compensation for our troops, people would rather not do that, and it has not generally gone down, and it's not going to go down, but we might have to, you know, stop some increases or slow some increases in a couple pay and benefit areas, and we're wrestling through. It's a very tough one for the chiefs, and we've been having a number of sessions with them on what to do. Secretary Gates, then Secretary Gates, and now Secretary Panetta, I think, have both talked about health care, and that's probably the one that people think of first. But our entire compensation package is a pretty big part of our budget, and it has to be looked at. That's something that, again, we probably would not have looked at had we not had the Budget Control Act putting pressure on us. And so picking whether to look at pay or particular allowances or in addition to health care benefits is something that we've taken a great deal of care on and spent a lot of time on, and there'll probably be something that we'll have to do. It'll be part of our package that will come out next year, some restraints, slowing the growth, not of course reducing anybody's pay. But
so that means you probably have a separate process for uniform personnel versus the civilian personnel too, I imagine.
Yes, and I've been around a long time, as I'm sure you have, and pay parity comes up a lot, and we have to get some guidance from OMB on how they will plan to handle the civilian workforce, even though we have half the government civilians, excluding the Postal Service. We don't really have any special consideration. I think the OPM and OMB still are in charge of the process of what is going to be. You know, is there going to be a third year of a pay freeze or not, for example, for federal civilians? And we have to interact with them and try and come up with a rational, you know, policy of what is going to be done with military benefits and pay versus civilian benefits and pay. But we need to look to them for guidance on the civilian side and then come to closure jointly with them on what makes sense as a coherent.
So on a base budget of about $550 billion, if you're trying to reduce $450 over 10 years, that's 8-9% out of each year coming ahead.
That's correct.
So besides pay and benefits in that area, what are you looking at in terms of acquisition?
Well, we have the Secretary has kind of talked about four broad areas, and compensation would be one, acquisition and modernization would be one, making the force smaller in some areas would be another one, and then anything that we can do to continue Secretary Gates's efforts on efficiencies, as well as looking at any of our kind of lower priority programs, would kind of be the fourth main category. On the modernization side, you know, of course, first you look to things where you desire a certain capability and you haven't given up on that, but the particular program is not working right. So you would, you know, look to make those reductions. And then we look at things where maybe we could get something a little later. You know, if we had hoped to have a new satellite come in year X, maybe you could see if there's any way you could make the current ones last till year X plus two, that kind of thing. Those are probably the more minor examples. And then you look at you really need to look at requirements. You know, mm-hmm. What are your plans? What are your goals to help you inform you whether you really don't need an airplane or a ship at all, though? And that's the harder part, that we rely on the services, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, to make recommendations to the Secretary, and then we work through them, because often what one service does will affect another service. You know, if you didn't have a certain satellite, maybe all the services would need it, even though only one pays for it.
So I imagine readiness is probably the top line priority that you measure all of these decisions against.
Right. The near-term readiness is a big concern. It's not necessarily directly tied to the budget as much as people might think, in that if you have a readiness problems can ensue. For example, this happened in the last couple of years in the previous administration in Iraq, when you took senior NCOs and, you know, key leaders from certain units and took them out of those units to have them train the Iraqi forces. The conscious decision was made to do that, but it then affected the readiness of the units they left, and no amount of money could have bought that readiness back, you know, in a near term, because you can't just go out and get some more highly qualified sergeants. You have to grow them or figure out how to make up for the fact that you've taken some out of their units and given them another task. But in the longer term, you know, funding does connect to readiness. In the near term, it's not the immediate connection one might think.
And very quickly, as comptroller, do you get a lot of emails and requests for appointments from program managers throughout DOD hoping to get a moment to kind of lobby, as it were, for their particular piece?
Actually, no. Most people work through, there's kind of a chain that people work through, and they are making their case mostly through their own services and then expecting their service leadership to weigh in at the senior level for what priorities to protect, rather than trying to separately communicate with us.